Brendan Devaney, presenter of the Daily Debate. What's coming up on the show this week?
What about you? Listen, we have to talk about the big one anyway, the All-Ireland final.
What did you make of it?
I suppose it was kind of, it was absorbed without ever being totally the game we wanted. Listen, all us neutrals in particular were thinking, you know, by far the best two sides in the country, and the build-up did all season. And it was a funny season, I suppose, with the new group phases and the new format and the way the calendar, where it was pulled forward in the calendar. And, you know, neither Dublin or Kerry were that brilliant all year. You know, they had funny enough leagues, even though Dublin went up, they had some poor performances at it. And the group stages in the game didn't set the world alight, but they came good then, particularly in the quarters. Both of them had probably their best game and were pushed all the way in their semi-finals. So they had a very almost like-for-like season going into this final. So, you know, when the forwards were on display, I had a feeling in my gut, just Craig, that both defences had so much fear of the forward lines, they were going to sit and counter-attack. And a few times it kind of looked like something you might see in Clonus, you know, but I thought it would open more in the second half, but it got very tense in the second half. So it was still unbelievably interesting and absorbing without ever being anything you would call a classic.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And you know, you could make analogies with other sports. It's not the best game ever, but there was enough in there to hold your attention. What do you think the difference was?
I just felt good. And Greg, we were doing a few podcasts and shows, and funny, I was talking a good bit about the likes of Mannion, particularly. He had some game yesterday. I just felt with last year, you know, like being at the semi-finals and seeing how close the two teams were, and then Dublin, of course, Pat Gilroy comes back and he seems to be this magician in the background, not taking anything away from Desi Farrell, but he seems to knit everything together. There seems such word about him, his influence over everything. Of course, he got the All-Ireland runs, started for Dublin, steadied the ship and brought probably the start of this thing that Jim Gavin took up on. So him coming back in, and then I think he brought together Cluxton, Mannion, McCaffrey, got these guys back. Of course, last season, Conor Killen and Bas Gill were injured. So in the build-up to this game, I was thinking, like, there's five players that are going to have a huge impact in this game. Kerry don't have this extra players in. So I thought if it gets down to nitty-gritty. But that said, Kerry led by 3 points twice in the second half. I think the small goal was massive. And, you know, obviously, Conn hit the crossbar before that. But the goal was lucky, fortuitous enough. But that goal, even though Kerry responded to it, you know, you heard Jack O'Connor talk after about the effort, because you tend to have, you'll have a spell, they have a spell. So Kerry put so much in to go back into the lead. I felt when it got close in, I thought there's only been one winner. And that said, Clifford, who, you know, by his own standards, wasn't on top of his normal scoring game. He had that chance to equalise. That goes over, and I think it's a draw game. But as it was, it went wide, and Dublin went up and got the second point. And the unbelievable nature of Cluxton and McCarthy and Fitzsimons won in 9 All-Irelands, you know.
Much speculation over their futures now. I think if you got 9, you'd want to round it off, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
listen, I don't think I could jack it in at 9. Not that I'll ever get half of that decision.
Yeah,
but
there's a magicness with the 10, isn't it? 10. We often hear Rangers and Celtic at the 10 or a row.
Yeah, I mean, you can get a shirt with 10 on the back. It's just 9 just doesn't look quite as good.
It's a funny thing that Fitzsimons funny threw that back last night, the question, it wasn't the right time and that. But listen, you Joanne Campbell, I think, had to kind of ask the question. Of course, no sign of Cluxton. He was way down the back somewhere. And he's a very nice fella. You know, even when you talk to him, you couldn't meet a nicer lad. He just, whatever it is, he's put up this blank to meet him. Maybe he'll surprise us and land on the Sunday game now when he retires. But I think of all people, Cluxton. Listen, I suppose there's two ways of looking at it. He's a goalkeeper, so you know he doesn't come out the pitch really like the other players. But again, him yesterday, his couple of kicks, his assurity was unbelievable. Listen, there's nothing to stop him physically playing. It's just if he wants to. The other two lads as well, it's not as if they both had great games. Probably McCarthy was a wee bit loose in possession. The wet day yesterday, I think, played a big factor, Rick, in terms of turnovers.
It did,
seen in tight areas, sometimes players were to go inside, and just that wee bit of wet ball meant it was tapped away. So there was a lot of that going on in the back.
Oisin was full of praise for the ref, letting the game flow, you know, letting a bit of physicality pass. He says that, you know, that's the way the game should be played. What's your feelings on that? Because then again, a lot of people thinking, oh, well, the ref should have done this, and then this would have happened, and that would have happened. I'm not really sure that it really works like that, because there are so many variables, even if a decision is made, like maybe given a penalty or something. But anyway, what do you think about the way the game was refed?
Yeah, Goff's
happy enough.
I suppose it's difficult again because of the wet day and people are slip sliding. And then when you see the tackle in slow motion, say when somebody kind of their head's down and then they get caught on the chin, when you see it back, you're like, whoa. And a few times in, maybe players are kind of sliding. Yeah. Did they mean it? Did they not? I thought the early tackle on Ryan in the Kerry goal, I thought that was a definite yellow at least. Yeah. The player did look at the keeper. The key is that if he's jumping the ball and he hits him accidental, but he definitely did take a look and then went into him. There seemed to be, seeing Ryan picked up a few knocks early on.
It would be interesting in the coverage, and I think it's kind of been tried now and again, but not even actually a camera on the ref. But for the presenters, the commentators, to put in context of, like, we're watching this from four or five angles and remind people this is what the ref saw. Do you know what I mean? Because as you say, it's like that in a moment the ref can't see it. Okay.
And you imagine the 2,000 people shouting down at you, and particularly if it comes down to a decision. I mean, the last three was going two up, and at that stage you're kind of thinking a ref's not going to maybe give a free, because everyone's feeling the words, oh, do Kerry deserve a draw in the game? Listen, they maybe did. You could make a case for it, but listen, he gives the call. And at the end of the day, that's where refs have to be strong. No matter what the score is or what the background noise is, you gotta go with your gut. Listen, Goff, I suppose, vastly experienced in it.
Yep, so you're joined by Kerry legend Mike Frank Russell, GAA columnist with the Irish News, Cahir O'Kane too. So two great lads to talk that through with. Former county hurling star Eugene Organs on the show.
Yeah, indeed. Well. The hurling championship running around the group stages, and Unions had a big one at the weekend against Buncranny. They have a great, very interesting game with Burt coming up. McCool's had a victory over Cairndonna. There was a few round robin games, and Cairndonna edged out Dunlow by a point and another. And as I say, Satanta are still the standard bearers. You have maybe should Unions and Bert tucked in after that. Maybe I think that's kind of how it's seen. But it'll be interesting to get Eugene's views on it and round it all up and get his expertise, Greg, because I was listening to one of your comments come in there about a guy saying you missed some protest in Dublin. I was laughing to myself. I have enough bother keeping up with GA stories. You have literally every local and national story. And some guy's highlighting something that you missed. As it goes.
But listen,
I don't know what you do. But
what's important to each individual is probably far more important to him than another issue might be to someone else. But that's fine. Yeah. It all is part of the game. Right. Okay. So great guests, great presenter too. You can listen to the Deal Debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny live after 7 this evening after the news at Auto Podcast at your leisure, as they say in America, on highlandradio.com. Do you have a good weekend, by the way?
Good weekend.
What is the weather in July?
Oh, I know. I was texting one of my buddies. He's back there in Downings, my wee buddy Kieran Green, and I was saying, listen, we'd probably need to go on a wee trip somewhere because it's not just going to happen at the beach for us now. It's still a good enough weekend. Listen, I'm hopping off piers and going out for spins and that. I mean, what's the point? I mean, you may as well still hit the sea and try and take some enjoyment out of it. But
100%.
It's a bit bloody miserable.
It's tough July. All right, let's roll on August. Okay, listen, yes. Brendan, look forward to hearing the show tonight. Brendan Devaney there, Deal Debate, live after 7. So stay tuned for that. Okay. A caller says, by the way, it's 9 minutes gone in the World Cup. Ireland 0, Nigeria 0. Ireland seem to have more of the possession. I'm not really watching it because I'm focused on what Brendan's saying, but Ireland certainly enjoy more of the possession early on from the side of my eye. There's actually one effort just wide from Ireland, a shot from the edge of the box. This caller says, I've enjoyed the World Cup, although the standard of football has been lower with flashes of excellence like Colombia's first goal yesterday. Plus, I must say, a lot more entertaining than Premier League soccer with its overpraised wailing babies and actors rolling around after the slightest tackle. Like watching paint dry. Well done to the ladies for bringing the game here from out of the shadows. Now the All-Ireland final had it all. Skill, luck, hard tackling and entertainment. Sportsmanship, now that is what I call a sport indeed. Okay, good assessment to both. Thank you for that. Let me see. More coming in here. HG levy applies to all UK registered as well as visiting lorries. It started in 2013 but was suspended during COVID. Similar environmental tariffs and charges are in place like in Belgium and Germany. Seems unfair to Donegal lorries who've no choice, but certainly doesn't target them. Has no direct relationship to any Irish government support for Northern Ireland infrastructure. It might not be direct, but I think you can understand how someone in the business facing a £12,000 sterling bill might sort of go, well, that's where my taxpayers' money's going. Greg, I think your texter is confusing the delivery drivers who did a protest in Dublin yesterday over the attacks on them and the stealing of their bikes. Right. I know exactly what you're on about. You're on about the delivery drivers. It just so happened many of them were non-national. Pity those complaining wouldn't get the right end of the story before automatically blaming non-nationals. Yes, indeed. I know. I am very familiar with that protest now. As I say, it just happens. They do work in the food delivery business and had been concerned about, A, the amount of money they're getting because it's the type of economy that it is, and also the fact that they were going into places and feeling threatened and unsafe. So now that you explain it, I do know exactly what you're talking about. Thank you for that. I do appreciate the help. We get there in the end, don't we? There's no doubt there is some crazy parking around Donegal. And it seems to generally go unpunished, unless it's you and you happen to maybe pull on a double yellow line for 30 seconds and next thing you know, you have a ticket or something. But parking in other areas seems to, you know, people can park whichever way they like and it doesn't seem to matter. Donegal Town suffers with this. The key, you know, if you're familiar with the town down there, there's limited parking on the Diamond. The main park is the car park. Well, there's a couple of them, but the key. And it's always tight for spaces. But people are abusing those spaces. And there's a picture which paints 1,000 words of a very nice big camper van, but it's across at least 4 parking spaces. Paul O'Sullivan took the picture. It's frustrating, Paul, isn't it?
Good morning, Greg. No need to water the hanging baskets today where I am.
I don't need for that at all.
I took that photo yesterday. I presume you were aware that there was a big regatta there yesterday. Mm. The Donegal Dragons were having their annual regatta there. So parking was restricted there, particularly at the head of the pier yesterday. So I popped down just to say the event was going ahead and had been deferred from Saturday. So I saw this monstrosity of yoke. And what really caught my eye was the fact, you know, apart from the fact that I parked around 4, although I think it was actually 5 if you really look at it closely. It was a big sign in the back, right across the width of the back of the camper van, "I do not comply."
Wow.
Now, I think that particularly got up a lot of people's goats, because clearly they don't comply and they don't care. And in fairness, as I said on my post, the majority of camper vans do comply and are quite respectful and respectful people. And I think the majority of people in Donegal Town probably would welcome them, however it needs to be controlled. And I think that's the problem, that the key area in Donegal Town is just open season. And some mornings there, particularly the weekends, and especially for the country music weekends and the weekend that's coming up, the bank holiday weekend, you could have 35, 36 camper vans on that pier. Now, they are bringing business to the town, but there's no facilities for them. There's no public toilets. Where is the grey water going? I did contact the owner of a registered and proper camper van site, Spearstown, which is outside Donegal Town near Clare Chapel. And he does not get any camper vans coming to him to empty their chemical toilet waste. Yeah.
So, and it is right beside the sea, so it would make you wonder. We can't make that accusation, but it would make you wonder.
Well, I don't know. As I said, I don't know. There is some evidence that yes, they probably are. A lot of the grey water is going into the storm.
There is a camper van community and camper van forums and websites and what have you. So it's clear that the quay down in Donegal Town has been flagged as a great place to stop. It's central, so you can pull in. There's no charges, and you can access all the brilliant pubs and restaurants and what have you. And as you say, there is a dividend from that. But, I mean, the amount that you're talking of that is displacing other traffic, you know yourself, people travelling from Strabane, Letterkenny, Gweedore to the Country Lights or whatever it might be. Is there something that needs to be done here? I'm not sure what the rules are in terms of overnight parking. This is what it is. You'll often see in, you know, signs on car parks saying no overnight parking. Is there a level of enforcement that needs to be put in here? Is there a revenue stream that needs to be tapped into? Because that business you talk of out the road, they're paying their water rates, their commercial rates and all that type of stuff. You know what I mean? It's not really
public
fair
indemnity
on them.
Insurance. And in fairness to him, it is outside the town. It's probably not near as convenient as the key is. But the owner of that site, Joe Quinn, step this up on his own, and he actually provides a taxi service free of charge and into the town, and not maybe all the time back from the town, but it's only a short taxi ride out. However, to go back to your point there, yes, clearly there is a revenue stream that's been missed by the council now, and there is, I don't know if you're aware, but there is a master plan that includes the Diamond in Donegal Town, and I believe that's starting in September. That also includes the pier area. Now, there isn't much emphasis on that. I don't know where that pier area master plan is. I was trying to get in contact with somebody in the council this morning, and off the record, but I couldn't get that. But there is a plan, and to go back to planning permission that was granted in 2019 to the Donegal Bay Rowing Club, they had a plan approved by the council for a maritime centre. Now, I don't know where that's at the minute. I did talk to Seamus McGuire this morning. He seems to think that it's on hold pending a wider and possibly better, I don't know, centre that the council are going to provide. But that would be a great asset for the pier. Yeah.
I mean, of course it would. It'd be a good asset for the community as well, because you can't leave the community behind in this. And there was a recent, I think it was last year or the year before, where the council had a public consultation on camper vans. And the whole idea of that was is that to recognise that we want people to visit the area, to recognise that we need to offer facilities and maybe business opportunities, but also to recognise that there are other businesses and there are the locals as well that also need to be accommodated. And what happens, it seems to be happening more often than not, is that people are coming down to that part of the quay, which is a beautiful place to pull in, I'm sure, but it's like it is a public, open, free area for them to do whatever they want. And that's certainly not in the spirit of that public consultation that went out last year or the year before.
Yeah, I do know that Paul Doherty Architects were involved in it. As I said, I don't know where it's actually at the minute, where it's at consultation stage, or whether there's been agreement among the council councillors. I really just don't know, and maybe if somebody does know, they might want to come on, and you might want to follow that up.
Yeah, maybe a bit better, because as I say, you know, I mean, no one wants to be the person that's comes across like a spoilsport. And I'm not saying you are, Paul, and we do, both of us recognise there are bigger issues, but, you know, if you tried to go down there and open a coffee van, you wouldn't be long being shifted. Do you know what I mean? Or something, do you know?
Correct.
So we want is fairness, and everyone accommodated fairly. So that's recognising the contribution that these guys make, but also recognising the other businesses and other challenges as well. As I say, if you were right parked odd ways on the Diamond, you wouldn't be long getting a ticket on certain days. So it's just to level the playing field. All right, Paul, the weather hasn't been great, has it? But what's the buzz around the town?
Well, it's the last day of July, so please God.
Roll on August.
Roll on the bank holiday weekend in the sun.
Yeah, all right, good stuff. Crossed. All right, Paul, take care of yourself. Bye. Thanks for your time. I appreciate you taking the call this morning. Pather joins us now. Hi, Pather.
How you doing, Greg?
What's your experience, you and your wife's experience?
We were about back in May. I think it was around the 27th of May. We had exactly the same experience that Paul just mentioned there, except this time the camper van was parked straight across two disabled parking spaces.
Wow.
And it didn't even have, we checked, we even took a photograph the same way and we put it up on Facebook and everything. And we checked that it didn't have its parking card or nothing. And they took up the whole two of the disabled parking spaces just there at the path going down to the pier.
Yeah, and as you know yourself, Pather, if you're familiar with the town, up until very recently on the Diamond, there was only one solitary bay for a person with parking with a disability. I think it might have been extended to two now. So those spaces central to the town are at a premium. So that makes those two that you talk of just down even more important.
That's precisely, that's right, Greg. It's ridiculous, like. And if anybody came, any disabled people came there, like, they had nowhere to park because although the spaces were taken up too, like, and it was ridiculous that they took up two of the parking spaces.
I think unless people were in your position, Pather, you and your wife's position, they wouldn't realise how frustrating it is to see that. I mean, it's a real slap in the teeth, isn't it? Those parking spaces are there for a very good reason.
Yeah, that's right. And my wife put it, like I said to you, she put it up on Facebook. Good like, woman. And she's the wheelchair user. I think you've talked to her before, and Love.
Uh-huh, I know.
Because yep. I think she's been on with you before, yep. About disability issues. But we put it up, and some people actually came back, and there was one comment, one lady came back with, I won't name, but she said, she says, they're good for the town. She says, all they're right. good for bringing money in. Like, and she says, you have to just live and let live.
No, well, if that's someone coming from a position perhaps that doesn't need a parking space because they've got a disability. I get where she may be coming from, but look, at that's ridiculous.
That was a bit uncalled for.
Okay, Patter. Yeah, go ahead. Make your point, Patter. Sorry.
No, it's just saying, Greg, like, I just wish people would be a little bit more considerate.
Yeah.
To parking, because there's not enough parking spaces anyway, like, for people with disability.
No,
and I just would people would think before they park up somewhere.
Yeah, and I think particularly Donegal Town has its particular challenges for people, not just actually parking, but getting around the town as well between sandwich boards
and right.
stuff.
That's,
yeah, okay.
That's right. That's another thing too. Like, a lot of these notice boards out on the footpaths and everything, making things that bit more difficult.
And you're afraid to say anything because you don't want to come across as anti-business, but there's on-street furniture as well, and the steps are quite high on the crossings, if I'm not mistaken, as well, Patter, in the town, in Donegal Town, that is.
That's right. But
well, there was a few councillors back in the day, I don't know how long ago it is now, 4 or 5 years, were invited to, and in fairness, accepted the invite to try and get round Donegal Town in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure much changed after that, but it gave them an insight onto what it's like. Patter, pass on my best wishes. Pass on my best wishes to Anne. Thanks for helping us raise the issue.
I will do.
Take care of yourself.
I will do indeed.
Thank you so
much. Thanks a million, Greg. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Thank you so much indeed. 086 60 25,000. We were talking about fobbing. This is being ignored because your other half's on their phone. I totally agree. My girlfriend is so busy on her phone at night, the conversation is dead. Even when we go out to eat, I have to fight and say, put the phone away at the table. I see a lot of it in restaurants where couples sit across from one another, not talking, but both on their phones. It's very sad, they say. Have you ever mentioned it to her, and how did that go down? Hi, my husband reconnected with an old school friend through social media last year and was planning a future with her when I discovered what was going on. He ended the marriage, moved out. He's waiting on her to leave her husband. Wow, unbelievable. So this person's husband just randomly met up with an old school friend, then went on to message, presumably, to plan her future, has left the marriage and is waiting on her to leave her husband. Well, listen, I know it might not feel like now, but that's a bullet dodged for you. I hope you get through that okay. That's a horrible story. I'm sorry you're going through that. The online space, it's great to get an opportunity to go into that. Maybe your business isn't in that space and there's great growth opportunities for you. We've got a world of expertise here to help you in that space effectively, is what they're saying. So if you want some help with your online stuff, 07491 25,000, ask for the sales team. It's 28 minutes into the Ireland versus Nigeria game and it remains a 0-0. Kate Shaw, World Vision International Senior Communication Advisor, joins us now. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Thanks good so much
to
for
have,
having me.
Good to have you on the show. And you're also an author of a new report, The High Price of Beauty, and it examines the use of child labour in the beauty industry. So give us an idea of what's going on, because this is, I don't know, they say ignorance is bliss. I think this will be news to, you know, for the first time to people today. And sometimes we try and avoid this news because it's unpalatable, but yet here we are. We're talking about it. So what can typically go on?
Yeah, absolutely. So child labour is actually a really common issue. It affects 1 in 10 children worldwide. And so children are giving up their educations, they're missing school, they're being exposed to harmful situations. In some cases, they're even dying trying to produce either agricultural or mined ingredients that go into common cosmetics. So things like cocoa butter or the vanilla that scents our creams and makes them nice, the copper peptide serums that keep us looking young. All of those things could have some child labour in them.
Yeah, and when we talk about child labour, like, what age are we talking of, or what age range might be a better question? You know, what kind of hours? Is this instead of an education, for an example? So, you know, paint a clearer picture as to when we talk about child labour, what that means for the life of the child.
So for different products and for different children, it'll mean different things. But I met children as young as 7 or 9 who are guarding vanilla gardens late at night in Uganda because there's a really high risk of theft. And so for them, that means that they're in danger from thieves. They were a couple who have had nightmares since they got attacked by some thieves who came up one night wielding machetes. More commonly, they might be missing school during the pollination season. So a couple months a year, they're not there. And so typically, these children might eventually graduate from primary, but they're doing it around the age of 17, 18. They're not graduating with their normal age range. In mining, you get children as young as 5 who are doing the sorting and the washing in a mine, so they're exposed to all those harmful chemicals. Once they're old enough, they might be going into informal tunnels that haven't been dug properly, and those tunnels unfortunately collapse quite often, so children end up dying or with life-changing injuries.
So people might choose their products because they claim to be cruelty-free or not tested on animals and what have you, and they think they're doing their bit and might even actually in some cases be paying a premium to help them sleep at night. Yet at the same time, these same products could be being applied off the backs of children.
Yeah, absolutely. So the cruelty-free mark is great. That means that there's no testing on animals, but it doesn't give any kind of indication over whether or not children have been involved in the production of the ingredients. So one thing that World Vision is asking for with this campaign is for consumers to really turn around and ask their governments to improve transparency legislation that requires companies to be clear about how they're sourcing, and also to ask the companies that you buy products from. So I'm one of these consumers, and I'm sure some of this is in my creams and things that I put on my face, but turning around and asking them, how certain are you that these supply chains are clean, and what can you do to improve it? Because World Vision works in a lot of these communities. We improve access to schools and help families earn more money, the kinds of things that help address the push factors into childhood.
That being said, I mean, obviously it's unimaginable that this might happen in Ireland or Britain or France, for an example. But is it more palatable in other countries? I can't believe I'm making a counter argument to this, but it's for the purpose of the conversation, i.e. that as unimaginable as it might be, a 7 or 9 or a 12-year-old is out doing this, that they might be one of the important breadwinners for a family. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, just simply stopping this might be doing them more harm than good. Now, you talked of awful cases where people die in mines, but I hope you understand the spirit of the question. Like, it's not just simply saying, right, we're not going to derive the product from there now, because that could be creating another problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely not saying to boycott these ingredients, because that'll only further impoverish the families that are trying to earn a living. So I think the main thing would be if the parents are paid a fair price for their vanilla, their cocoa, their mined materials, then they're a lot less likely to have to rely on their children in order to help them produce those. They can hire help to help with the pollination or the spraying and the pesticides and the weeding. They can gather enough palm nuts to earn a living without dragging their children in to help them meet a quota. So if the parents are paid a fair price, that helps eliminate the push factors into child labor. We're definitely not saying there's some kind of evil scheme that's people want to have child labor. They're sort of doing this because they don't have a
choice. But it is accepted as well. I mean, and you could say it's the beauty industry's dirty secret. I mean, are any within that industry saying, here's our product and we can guarantee you that it is not derived, in any way that exploits children? Do you know what I mean? It's very easy for them to say we don't test it on animals and to market that as a positive, right? But are any companies coming out and saying we recognise that this industry exploits children through child labour, and we don't do that by our products?
I haven't heard anyone make that statement.
I think that in itself is really quite shocking, because it requires a level of complicity, and it means that people are going, right, okay, we can market this cruelty-free stuff, but don't mention the children, because that's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, and so things like the Modern Slavery Act in the UK, I don't know the Irish example, I'm sorry, but
that's okay.
So things like that are requiring companies to look at their supply chains a bit more. And so I think there's starting to be a bit more attention to this, but I think we really need that consumer push to companies to really make them pay attention to their supply chains and really get to the bottom of it. Because, yeah, like you said, until they look at it and they realize that it's important to the people buying, they're not going to be too focused on it.
And listen, that's the sad thing is that will be the motivational factor. Is this, you work in communications, you know yourself, can we market this? And will that offset maybe an increase in costs?
Absolutely. And it's by cutting out the middlemen too, because a lot of them are cutting out a lot of the profit. And so the families at the end of the chain don't get this protection, and the people in the middle are taking it without a lot of involvement in the process.
So just to recap, across the industry, as far as we know, because no one stands out and says otherwise, you know, what level of content of these products are likely harvest or have some element of child labour in them?
That would be a really hard question to answer. I don't have that data, so I can tell you that.
So what we know is, yeah, 30% of the ingredients in cosmetics are derived from either mined or agricultural commodities. But within that 30%, we don't know how much of that is child exploitation or use in child labour. I get you, Kate. Listen, thanks for your time this morning. We do appreciate it. Take care. That's Kate Shaw, World Vision International Senior Communications Advisor, who's not saying, look, boycott the products, but maybe send a message off to your favourite company to say, can you guarantee me that these products aren't being made with produce that involves child labour? Hi, Greg. Any chance of getting a description of the men trying to beckon children into cars in the Finn Valley, saying guards have CCTV and it's easy to use a different car? Well, it was a dark-coloured, this is what is suspected, a dark-coloured Volkswagen Passat, Cavan registered, which was reported as beckoning two children into the car at the Finn Valley Centre car park. Three young men were in the car and CCTV has been made available to local Gardaí. Now, again, we only got the information that the Gardaí responded to a call, so that doesn't necessarily mean everything was as it appears, and I'm not saying it's not as it appears either. Right. Hi, Greg. I was listening to a lady last week on your show. I'm a foster carer for a child with special needs. I applied for parents' benefit and was refused, but no response whatsoever. And I think if there was better communications, it might make these decisions more understandable. Right. 36 minutes gone. Ireland nil, Nigeria nil. The best of the chances so far, certainly cumulative to Ireland at this stage, but it remains scoreless. An emailer says, God rest Sinead O'Connor. I remember the 1992, the tearing of the picture of the Pope life on TV. I was living in the US then, and all the negative stuff about her from the media. I remember a quote from Frank Sinatra about it saying, if she was my child, I'd give her a good spanking for doing what she did. He was no angel to be throwing stones at glass houses, quite true. Media didn't want to know of the following good deed back in December 1992. God rest her soul, a hero of mine. So that was singer Sinead O'Connor, subject of criticism recently for tearing up a picture of the Pope. This is an article going back to that time, and for her eccentric behaviour. She donated $750,000 to a California home to charity after watching an appeal for donations to aid Somalia on television. O'Connor, who bought the house in West Hollywood in 1990, and as I say, I'm reading from an old article here, called in on Monday to the ITV This Morning show after a presenter urged viewers to help the starving Somalis. Her offer was accepted immediately, and the house then auctioned off in London in February, and it was worth an awful lot of money at that time. So that was a good deed she did at that time. So much has been played of Sinead O'Connor. We didn't really get a chance to play some music of hers, which we have now. And there was another person she sang with. It's kind of a bit of a strange one, but I really liked it, so I wanted to play it on the show today, with Terry Hall, who also passed away recently. And it was a version they did together of Donna's song, All Kinds of Everything. Wedding bells, early morning dew.
city sights, neon lights, grey skies or blue.
As an interesting collaboration. Terry Hall, you might know him. He was the lead singer of The Specials and Two Tone, Funboy 3 as well, and was an interesting character. He passed away on the 18th of December 2022. He was just 63, and of course, Sinead O'Connor very recently passing away at the age of just 56. And there were calls, actually, some calls came into the show on Friday, but we didn't get to them, that they believed, it was two or three people, that Sinead O'Connor should receive a state funeral. Right, okay, that was All Kinds of Everything, Donna's song there, from Terry Hall and Sinead O'Connor. A caller says, I am a MICA victim. I attended last Monday's meeting at the On Green and Hotel. I felt total empathy for MAG representative Lisa Hone having to armour herself with all the knowledge to single-handedly answer all the questions that were rightfully being asked of her. The anxiety levels in the room were palpable. I met a lady in her mid-80s in the foyer who had to leave the room. We got talking and I was horrified to hear that she's going through this anxiety also when she should be enjoying her life. This is totally unjust and wrong on any humane level. I had detached myself from my situation for a while, as to be honest, it's really affecting my mental health. Meeting this lady, however, was a turning point for me, and I felt I had to speak out on the night to try to give people some hope and maybe reignite the fight I had lost or had been beaten out of me by facing the countless hurdles in our way. I have no regrets, I said what I had to say. Yes, our housing minister wasn't there, so Lisa from MAG had to answer everything homeowners are tasked with coming up with, all the answers and solutions. I ask myself, why did the housing minister survive a motion of no confidence only last month by the Donegal County Councillors? Is it any wonder he thinks he doesn't need to attend? Very few, possibly only one councillor attended a meeting that housed families going through one of the county's greatest, gravest ever issues. That says a lot, to be honest. 4 years ago this month, I attended a meeting in the same hotel held by MAG. 48 months later, we are in reality no further forward in actually getting this solved. This is due to the stark disregard of any urgency to move this forward at a government and civil service level. I can only urge other homeowners to keep the morale, keep questioning, keep voicing their opinions. As always, the homeowners will be the catalyst to ending this totally unjust nightmare. Take care all. That comes in from Chris there. All right, half time in that World Cup match, Ireland's last match of this World Cup. And it is 0-0 going into the break, or having gone into the break. All right, okay, so we were talking earlier on about the £10 levy that lorry drivers face now from Donegal going into Northern Ireland. For whatever reason, it was introduced, but it's not the only burden they have to carry, it seems, according to the Kirloch of the Glenties Municipal District. That's Councillor Michael McClafferty. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
Right, okay. So you've had contact from truck drivers. What have they been saying to you?
Truck drivers, basically what Greg had been saying to me over the while, just caught my attention there when I rang this morning, spoke to Caroline briefly, when John mentioned there about Bosa. But the problem is Bosa in the north or in the UK as such are the equivalent of our RSA out here, if you like, where you get stopped along the road and they can check your car, check your truck, check your bus, whatever. But the problem is, as it seems to be in what Bosa on their locations at the moment, if they find a fault in your lorry and you dispute the fault, they insist there is a fault. For example, the most recent one I'm aware of a truck driver was stopped and they went round the lorry and they couldn't find nothing else, and they said then that they felt one of the wheel nuts was slack, and he says they weren't slack. So to prove the point, a bit of a situation with the argument got up over who was right and who was wrong. So the truck driver went, got his wrench, went right round the nuts, and he says the nuts slack. And the Bosa boy went with his hammer and he tapped the hammer and he says it's slack. He says he found him on the spot. And the problem is, Greg, as you know, if you don't pay or your company doesn't pay the fine, they'll lift the lorry. This is totally unfair, like. And to me, to be quite honest with you, that's over the top regulation. It's over the top, just abuse of power if somebody's in that position and they can say to you, to me it's just like it's a cash for all, to be quite honest with you.
You believe that this is just a money making exercise, is that what you're saying?
On occasions like this, I'm not saying the whole thing, Greg, is a money making exercise, but I'm saying in that occasion and on other occasions, yes. For example, another occasion as well, Donegal truck driver as well was on his way to the boat. He was 15 foot, Greg, from the boat door, to 15 foot from literally driving onto the ramp, and they stopped him and asked to see his tachograph. And he showed them the tachograph anyway. Apparently, he was maybe 15 minutes allegedly over. And much, £1,500 they fined him, Greg. I mean, from 15 foot from the Fleming boat door, they've charged that guy £1,500 of a fine because they found that he was 15 minutes allegedly over the driving time as such. Now, anybody knows the driving lorries in particular, Arctics in particular, or even smaller, but the Arctics in particular, because they're the main lorries all through Ireland, through Europe, driving, hauling their products and such, more or less anyway. The timelines are tight. You can get caught in traffic. Anything can happen. It's very difficult. And the question has to be asked, Greg, to be fair, of both of these boys, to be fair. No, just give the Irish boys a break. Give the truck drivers a break, like, regardless where they're from. I think it's very unfair, and I'm quite honest with just two examples, Greg. I think it's very, very unfair. And I do feel just the power has just been... The powers went to the head, to be quite honest with you.
Obviously, you know, there's various ministers in the Dublin government that could have a say on this. And in fact, there are people, there's people elected in Northern Ireland that could be speaking out on this as well. The truck drivers, and unless I've missed it, don't get me wrong, I would hold my hands up if I had. The truck drivers don't seem to be getting any support in relation to this. And you heard from John, and he's an organiser. If he wants to organise a protest, I'm sure he could do it quite successfully. You know, is this because really how many Dublin-based, Galway-based, Cork-based, Louth-based, or, the counties I'm talking of, drivers probably don't have to go through the north per se. They might, but they might have to pay it when they get to Britain, I don't know. But anyway, my point being is, you know, no one's backing these guys. You know, no one in Dublin saying, look, hey, this is not in the spirit of something or other. Do you know what I mean? They seem to be left on their own to campaign on this.
But this is the problem. That's what I was saying to Caroline in the morning. This is the problem. This is going back to 2013 that's come in, but I clearly remember ourselves, 2014, February 14. I recall that day, Christy Galler and them and John and others like that tried to get a protest going that time, organised all the contacts and all the officials. Everything else, it didn't take off. Whatever they were doing themselves, they did not get the support of the government. I believe it was Valentine's Day 2014. I'm nearly sure it was. Stand be correct, but I'm pretty sure it was. It was a Sunday. We were all out in the Swally Drive, I believe it was at the time. I'm meeting out there through Christy Galler there at Lifford. Most people see us lorrying the road there, orange, white Volvo hauling the sand blocks and so on. And the likes of John McLaughlin and various other hauliers at the time that all come together as they do from time to time. But they didn't get the support of the government that time when they were challenging that time the 10-year-old levy. And the problem was that time was rightly highlighted that time by Christie. And much is going to be passed on, no more than John McLaughlin highlighting this morning, as obviously going into the thousands. This again is all going to knock on. I know it's a European thing, Greg, to be fair, and it's not just, we're not isolated alone here in our own island. But the problem is, the government need to give a hand here to the boys that are struggling. It is not easy in the truck world or the bus world or the taxi world, and they are not getting the support that they need.
Yeah, all right. You talk to anyone in those industries, and it seems the system is set up against them to make it difficult to the regulated out of it. As if their right vital role is not recognised, but as if efforts are made to actually discourage them from being in the business for whatever reason. Okay, Councillor Michael McClafferty, Cathaoirleach of Glenties Municipal District, thank you for your time this morning. Just to a few comments here. I was speaking to a few business people in Donegal Town, and I asked them if those transient visitors in motorhomes and motorcycles were good for business in the town. The general answer was that they bring very little revenue as they have most of their provisions with them. Motorhome parking at the pier should not be allowed. It is a blight on the picturesque beauty of Donegal Bay. Do you agree? Greg, in relation to camper vans parking in Donegal Town, just wish that someone would open a proper park. There used to be a park out at the Killybegs Road and also one at the Clare Chapel, but it only had a few spaces for a few vans. It's a lovely clean spot. As the owner of a camper van, I have to say I feel very unwelcome in Donegal Town and other towns because the van does take up two spaces to park. That being said, I was parked behind or trying to park beside a Land Rover on Friday, and it took up two parking spaces the size of the bloody thing. But anyway, we asked to leave Glenveagh one time because of this. I'm quite happy to pay for my parking and I do always use parks, but even to go for a day anywhere, camper vans are not made welcome. We do bring business to everywhere we go, pubs, restaurants. Those vans that abused the disabled spot should get a fine, but it's only a few. We just need a lot more parks. We don't deserve the bad publicity we get, as with everything, there are always just a few bad apples. Indeed, and that's what I was talking about. You know, there was this strategy investigated by the council with a view to getting the balance right, to see the benefit to the economy, to make space available, to not block up roads that are for local access and all that kind of stuff. Somewhere in all of it, we need to find a solution. It's not beyond us. And of course, I don't think anyone suggested all camper van owners are responsible. But I do know there is this notion that they don't bring anything to the local economy. I don't believe that to be true, but that is something that's put out there quite a bit. A caller says the speed limits are exactly the same. It's all a money racket. Are they though? Speed limits, we need them, don't we? Just to let you know, by the way, and I'll remind you just as we're signing off, that Michaela Clark is in this week for John Bredesen around the Northwest. All the usual great music and features and interviews and what have you. But Michaela's in the hot seat coming up after the news at 12. So stay tuned for that, as you always do, but today as well. Regarding Father Pat McGarvey, this came in on Friday. We first met Father McGarvey in Creasler on the day that changed so many lives forever. So many people were there, volunteers helping to move rubble, to the guards, the fire service and search and rescue. And we are grateful beyond words for the work they all did that day. There was a man who walked between people offering help, offering guidance and support, Father Pat McGarvey. And to be honest, I didn't know he was a priest until he unzipped his coat and I seen his collar. He stood with us right through that day. He directed us in how the process of waiting while the search services searched for our missing. He prepared us for what the next few hours lay ahead and prepared us for what we were going to see. Father Pat gave us the strength to remain dignified in the eyes of people looking on, and especially in the eyes of the media. That day, he was a pillar of strength for myself and my family. Nothing was a problem. In the end, he took it upon himself to bless our loved ones whose life ended on that terrible day. I just hope he knows how much he is appreciated. Okay, so very nice comment there. I noticed in the newspapers today, the latest government fear is artificial intelligence. They fear that it could be weaponized to spread fake news in the run-up to the elections. And it is something we all are going to have to keep an eye on. I hope I have enough time to read this before the end of the show. It is something we're all going to have to keep an eye on. You know, we do claim to think for ourselves and be free, but we have to source your information from many different places and make sure it is accurate and not just some nonsense that's being spread to you. But anyway, the government is deeply concerned about the impact artificial intelligence could have on the spread of disinformation during election campaigns. Housing Minister Dara O'Brien, who's already been mentioned today, who is also responsible for electoral reform, wrote to the newly established Electoral Commission setting out his fears over the capacity of AI to create and spread fake news online at a scale never seen before. Mr. O'Brien warned that without strong guardrails, Regulating the rise of AI, democratic debate will be undermined and skewed by data-driven virtual bar. Now, this is a bit obvious and a bit easy. It's not a criticism. But do you know what's good for democratic debate? Coming on the radio and talking about billion-dollar schemes? I mean, you could argue not doing so kind of does undermine democratic debate. But anyway, I didn't say that, did I? I don't believe it to be true. Okay. Anyway, we're going to talk about that in more detail tomorrow because it is, or despite how it's being framed, it is something we all want to be aware of, isn't it? Heading into particular election cycles, we want to make sure the information we get is accurate. Last comment of the day. Hi, Greg. Is there a charge on UK lorries travelling into the Republic of Ireland? No, there isn't, you see. And that is where John McLaughlin was saying it is unfair. There isn't a charge. And there's no plans to do so either. And it is not very fair. It would be goodwill maybe to waive the charge in the other direction, seeing as it's not coming back the way. All right, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, as always. Thanks to Niamh as well, working tirelessly on the programme. Stay tuned. As I mentioned earlier, Michaela's on the way around the Northwest. But for me, Greg Hughes, enjoy the rest of your Monday.